only 6 new episodes left before Voyager's series finale.
Step aside.
Has Voyager entered a parallel universe?
Nice mustache.
What seems to be the trouble, one of three?
It hurts when I do this.
Well, then don't do it.
An all-new Voyager.
Welcome to Strange New Takes. I'm your host, Notch Karnick, and with me on the Starship Vortex are...
Adam Bowen.
And Emily Bowen-Marler.
Welcome to Strange New Takes. This week we're starting a new recap series, one that deals with episodes of Star Trek that originate on the holodeck, holodeck adventures. There's quite a few of them. Today we're going to recap the episode Author Author from Star Trek Voyager.
So remember to follow us on social media. That's at Strange New Takes on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Tell your friends about the podcast and also give us a 5-star rating on that newly renamed Apple podcast. And by newly renamed, I think that happened a while back. So not new anymore.
It's just newly renamed on our podcast because we kept saying the wrong thing for a while. And just so you know, there's going to be spoilers. So if you haven't seen this 20-year-old episode and you don't want to be spoiled, go watch it. It's a fun one. Then come back and listen to our take on it.
All right. Well, again, we're talking about Author Author, which is the 20th episode of the 7th season of Star Trek Voyager. It aired on 18th April 2001. Double play is by Phyllis Strong and Mike Sussman. The story is by Brandon Braga. It's directed by David Livingston. And it is the 600th live-action episode of Voyager ever
Star Trek. Not Voyager.
Can you tell I haven't had a lot of sleep? Voyager, 600.
That's why Voyager is the best one, because there's 600 episodes of Voyager alone.
Yeah, just because of the law of averages, they have some good ones just because of that. When you make 600 episodes, something has to be good. That archive of unaired episodes is amazing. Okay. Can you imagine if there's a bell curve and Threshold isn't at the worst end of it? Okay.
Oh no.
Right. We always start these episodes with our strange new takes. So who's got a strange new take for me, crew?
Yeah. So my strange new take is... I don't know. I think I need to go take a look at my chickens and see what's going on with them. Their tails look a little bit on the ratty side, so I'm suspecting that there's some sort of lice thing happening. So I'm going to have some fun treatment programs I'm going to be putting them through, and then we'll figure out how to remediate that. For the episode, though, I believe that the pitch for this one was the writers had just finished watching... Measure of a Man, and they said, you know what, that was a great episode. What if we did that episode but much worse? That's how they created this one.
Oh, I see the sides are starting to form right now. Oh goodness. Well, my strange new take, so sorry, dear listeners, that you have to listen to me talk about this so much, but I live in the hottest of hot spots right now in Springfield, Missouri, which is one of the major coronavirus hotspots in our country because of the Delta variant. We now have more critical care patients in the hospital than we did at the peak in January. So please wear your masks and get vaccinated. And if you don't want to get vaccinated, wear your masks, because we don't want to have I don't know my Greek alphabet, the epsilon variant, because y'all won't do the things that you need to do to mitigate this pandemic that is mutating rapidly across this country. So anyway, that's what's going on here in my neck of the woods. My strange new take for the episode is that it is really the doctor, for as much as he has advanced and and strengthened his program, he sure is pretty obtuse when it comes to understanding how people are going to feel about things. Like, anyway, I mean, I caught on immediately. I was like, oh, this isn't going to go over well. Granted, I've seen this episode a bunch of times, right? But, you know, it's just immediately I'm like, oh, yeah, they're not going to like this. And he just doesn't understand why they don't like it.
The doctor's not well known for his bedside manner, and that has been amplified in all of his exploits.
So I am going to mine my recent experiences for my strange new take, which is that tiny planes suck. I feel like when I was growing up, every plane that I got onto was Boeing 737. It was like big seats, you know. And I'm not like a mega tall person. I'm just 6 feet tall, okay? Which is, but this country, it's pretty average for men. And I feel though, like at some point in the last 15 years, these stupid Embraer like commuter jets have started like proliferating. They're having sex all over the place and making more little commuter jets. And this was a flight from Newark to Minneapolis. It is not a short haul, okay? Like, all right, fine. You want to go from Iowa City to Cedar Rapids and you need a little commuter jet? Great, go for it. But if I'm flying from Newark, one of the largest hubs of United Airlines, to Minneapolis, again, one of a large hub, not like the biggest for United, but still, it's a pretty big airport, you should be giving me like a 737 or an A340 or whatever, you know, where I don't feel like, literally, and this might get into slightly TMI territory, I had to like bend my knees at a 40 degree angle to be able to urinate, okay, standing up. And that is uncomfortable. You know, I am not someone who has had to do so like that sort of position since growing up. Maybe if I had to, I'd be great. Like, hey, Notch, you're going to grow up on an Embraer commuter jet now. And because of that, you're going to be great at this stuff. That is not my existence. So anyway, tiny planes suck. That's my strange new take. And we need fewer of them. Moving on. I had forgotten how much I loved this episode when I first watched it. I've watched it maybe once in the last like 15 years. And I used to love it and watch it a lot as a kid. And I just, the Doctor is such a, Robert Picardo owns him so much that it's wonderful to see him in his element. And I don't know, the comedy here is just hilarious. And I love it. But we'll get more into that in a second. Let's jump into in-depth episode discussion. Here's a summary. The Doctor completes work on a holo novel that depicts the crew of Voyager in rather unflattering roles as they abuse and scorn the emergency medical hologram. When the holo novel is published without his permission, the issue of the Doctor's legal rights is brought into question. And also, so this is the summary and memory alpha so far. And then they have five more words. Seven reconnects with her aunt. Full stop. And I don't know why that was tacked onto the end, because there are other more poignant connections, like Torres and her dad, for example. Yeah. But it's just like, Seven reconnects with her aunt. Okay. Anyway, moving on from the summary. This episode, I think maybe the best way to discuss it is through the different conversations that occur. Because I think those are kind of the pivoting points. Is the pace of this episode is so frenetic that I feel like every single scene has a different thing that happens. So I'm going to take us through some of those. And the initial start is basically the Doctor, we find out that Pathfinder is going to allow Voyager to talk to Earth for a few minutes every day. So that sets up the B plot of these families having 3 minute long conversations. And then we also see the Doctor having a conversation with his publisher. So those are the kind of the initial teaser setup. So this moves past the actual teaser. This is kind of setting up the rest of the episode.
Yeah, and it's weird. So I know that I came in with like the hate train immediately on this episode, but I like a lot of the aspects of this episode. It's just that there, we'll get to it at a certain point where
the measure of the man part.
one thing that I guess there's two things in particular that are just like just awful. but I like this setup, and it's a it's nice to have a I don't know, I like the idea that we're like it's the final season. We need to like we're gonna start feeling like actually we are gonna get home, and I just like the connection opportunities that we're getting for the characters. So like just in terms of placement in the timeline of Voyager, I really like this episode kind of stepping outside of the bounds and thinking about like, oh, what's the greater arc of Voyager itself? I don't know. I like that about this episode.
Yeah, it's surprising how much this episode references things that have already happened on Voyager. In not necessarily like hardcore in your face ways. I mean, the whole setup of Pathfinder, if you haven't watched the episode Pathfinder, you won't know what's happening, which is that. And also, I guess we should state the context real quick. Voyager's lost in the Delta Quadrant, if you haven't read most basic things about that show. But like, they've by this point in the seventh season, which is we're coming up, I think we're six episodes from the end or something like that, they've reestablished connections to Earth, and the Pathfinder Project, led by Reg Barkley and sponsored by this admiral who's in the episode played by Richard Hurd, is the reason that that connection exists. So, well,
is it Admiral Paris? Isn't it
Admiral?
Isn't it Tom's dad?
Is it Tom's dad?
It's Tom's dad.
Just random admiral that has a vested interest in Voyager coming home.
It's not one of those guys who shows up in some weird variation of the TNG outfit for like one episode and then disappears, which is the reason that the like Memory Alpha Admiral's outfit section is like 30 pages long. They're like, we have a new admiral. Someone get off the gold trim and get some buttons from like the Klingon outfits. We're going to change this up.
They should have just put a casting call of, we need a 5'8" admiral who weighs 158 pounds and fits exactly in this specific uniform. We don't feel like making a new one.
Admiral Paris is actually just Lieutenant Marseille. He's like Paris with a mustache, looking like old mecha.
I think you totally just described my husband, Adam, actually. As a casting call for him. That's hilarious.
Well, we get pretty quickly into the Holo novel itself, which we experience.
I was going to say the best part is persons with vascular disorders should consult a physician before running this program.
that was a great inclusion.
It was.
And that it was 10 minutes long. And so Paris is like, how long is this introduction? Okay, can we skip to the first chapter?
So this is actually a good question. Do y'all actually, when y'all do audiobooks, you're reading a book, do y'all read the author's introduction or do y'all just go straight to the first chapter?
I usually read it. I will say that if you're reading Parable of the Sower, I don't recommend reading N.K. Jemisin's introduction to that before reading the book, because she spoils something that happens, I think, in the second book, in the middle of that. But for the most part, I do like reading the introductions.
I like reading them, but sometimes they become like, you know, letters from that Ken Burns documentary about the Civil War. I would like to thank dearest Martha for waiting for me as I wrote this book. My children, Shelby and Tommy, were the most delightful children in my life, and they brought me so much joy as I was writing pages 100 to 130. Tommy did have some problems in pages 200 to 200. You know, it just goes on and on and on and on, and you're like, oh my God, please come
I like
to
it
the
when
point.
They do that part at the end. Like, they have an introduction that's...
Yeah, now that you actually
and then
care
they do
about
the acknowledgments,
who I am.
Right. Because I'm interested in reading the acknowledgments after I've read the book, because I'm like, oh, I want to see what went into this, you know.
Right. Moving back to talking about the episode. So essentially now, for the next so many scenes, it's basically different people from Voyager stepping into the Starship Vortex. Which is so funny, and discovering they're like doppelgangers, and you know, we have Paris taking a turn, and then Torres, Neelix, Kim, and Janeway. I absolutely loved every one of those scenes. Those scenes for me, maybe this is me just reverting back to the like 15-year-old me that watched this the first time, were just so hilarious. Like when Captain Jenkins just like shoots the patient. It's hilarious. It's like, I can't treat him. I'm treating this other patient. is like, or he'll die. He is dead.
But you know, yes, because you and also you're watching it and it's like, how much of this, like, does the doctor really, like, how much does he think of his coworkers or his, what do you call them?
Yeah.
Colleagues. I don't know.
Yeah, colleagues.
One of the things that I really noticed, I mean, like, you notice everyone kind of getting a little incredulous at a certain point, except for Neelix. Neelix didn't really seem to have that. Neelix had a more, maybe a healthier way of looking at it than the rest of them. But Janeway looked so sad. I don't know if you all noticed that, but she just looked really sad when she stepped into the role and was doing that. And then by the end of it, she was pissed. But I think, like, I could see just the way Kate Mulgrew played it. You could see that the wheels were turning. Like, how is he feeling on this ship? And what have we done to contribute to him feeling this way? And I just kind of saw that happening behind the eyes.
I think this is actually a better vehicle maybe to talk about these early scenes, which is, I think that there is, and this was the first time watching it, I think, as an adult for me, who's got more social consciousness, that I think that there's a really poignant message here, which is that we have seen this play out over the last 5 years over and over again. Somebody from a underrepresented group coming up and saying, this is how I see the world. And people be like, what? No, that's not how the world is. And then someone be like, here, I filmed it for you on camera. And we have had to peek into the lives of, and this is actually from the standpoint of, like, what the holodeck allows you to do. It actually allows you to step into people's lives in a way that we as human beings right now today cannot. And I thought that was really poignant. And I thought it was actually well before its time, this, like, way. And I think it's dealt with in a more humorous touch, perhaps, mm-hmm. than maybe a, like, you know, a very special episode of Star Trek might have been.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I actually thought that was kind of nice.
Well, yeah. So I like that aspects of it. And I think I'll get in. I think this makes sense for me to get into the first thing that bothers me about this episode. And that is Janeway's response that, like, in the conversation that they have in the ready room, Janeway says something along the lines of, if I didn't know any better, I'd say this was written by someone who feels oppressed. Is that how you feel, Doctor? And the tone in her voice to me feels so much like it's a, like, it feels like the one part of this episode that really does not age well, because it feels like we're supposed to be on Janeway's side in that conversation, or maybe it's just because of Janeway's role. I always, like, when I'm watching Voyager, most of the time I'm like, yes, Janeway has the right idea. She really does need to sleep, though. It's, you shouldn't just drink coffee. But, like, I don't know. It feels like the writers couldn't comprehend that someone who's, as you said, like, it's like in a marginalized or equity-seeking group, is like, that they might have a different experience of the world than other people, and that they have to deal with, like, these constant people belittling their either their appearance or, like, who they are or their role. And I don't know. It felt really jarring for me in a way that I don't know. I think this used to be one of my favorite episodes of Voyager, maybe Star Trek in general, part of because it was, like, a lot of fun and I love the Doctor and stuff like that. But it just, that moment was hard for me to just deal with, and felt very much like a 90s writers versus 2021.
Well, and I feel like it was, like, I found that to be jarring because of how Kate Mulgrew played her scene going through the holodeck program, because she played it as someone who was having her eyes open to the fact that a member of her crew actually was feeling oppressed. Like, that, yes. I felt like that's how she was experiencing it. So then for her to go in the ready room, be like, Doctor, are you feeling oppressed or something? You know, like, the way she said it seemed to be more dismissive. And I don't know why the Doctor didn't say, actually, yes.
Yeah.
I do feel a bit oppressed. You know, you all don't quite recognize the ways you talk to me or the comments you make in front of me, or anyway, the microaggressions.
Yeah, I have a different take on this, and this is good, right? I am. Before I start saying this, like, I just want to say I'm really glad we have an episode where we are expressing different points of view very passionately. So let's keep doing that. But I think my reaction to this was that this happens. This is actually the, you know, when you think about like someone pointing out that, hey, my experience in this company for the last 2 years hasn't been entirely positive. The boss typically does, like, you know, there's always people out there who are very enlightened and come into that with like, this is great. But there are a lot of people like, what? You've been unhappy? Don't, come on, Johnson, you can't have been experiencing these things. I know all these people. They're wonderful. Everything is great. And there is, so I feel like that defensiveness is actually a very human quality. And I think it comes up against what you want to see from your captain, whether you want your captain to be the person who immediately picks up on the poignant, important point and becomes somebody who guides other crew people who maybe are lesser, who have a lesser understanding of that issue, or whether you want your captain to display those same things. And I think for me, it was kind of like, I took that as her not getting the point right away. That her initial reaction was very much one of, oh man, like, this is, I don't like that the, it ends with me deleting, like, taking it very personally and being out. And this happens to all, to me all the time. Like, I'm going to just be honest with you all. Like, the red mist covers my eyes sometimes, and it takes me a second to be like, wait, you need to move past your emotional reaction to understand what this other person is telling you. And then that's why that initial reaction, she hasn't got there yet. And so that's how I read that scene. But I think you're right, Adam, in that I think the fact that it is dealt with as a humorous episode could hide some of that, maybe. And I think that could, you're not sure. Like, is the humor in the fact that the doctor is making fun of all of his friends? And so is that meant to be like that he is, the doctor's wrong because it's treated humorously? Or is it that it's just a humorous way to present this very serious issue, if that makes sense?
Yeah.
So I can see that confusing matters.
Yeah, I can see your point about that. I think my remaining quibble, even with that, is sort of if that is us displaying that Janeway's not like yet on the doctor's side in terms of like being able to understand his perspective or whatnot. But the thing is, I don't know that we ever take the captain further along. Then everyone gets on the doctor's side of like, yes, you should be able to delete your book that we hate. And like, that's where we're like, we're into supporting the doctor, but it's not in the, like there's not a point where someone actually thinks about like, I maybe Paris gets the closest to this where it's sort of like, hey, doctor, how do you feel when I'm like sort of showing you kind of what you're doing to me? Like it seems like a way, and I guess Neelix also, like, they're both better at getting the doctor to feel what other people might be feeling in this situation. But I don't know that we really get into acknowledging that, like, the doctor, people are shitty to the doctor. Like, we just watched the
Caretaker.
Yeah, Caretaker, and like people talk to him, talk about him like he's an inanimate object, and are leaving him on, and all sorts of stuff. And it's I don't know. I feel like it's a that, and maybe it's just a problem of the episode's trying to do too many things. Like, it's like we don't want to get into very special episode territory. We're trying to have a funny episode, but we still have these like,
yeah,
punches happening, and it's just I don't know, it feels tonally it's just not where I would want it to go, I think.
So I feel like we're totally jumping to like the kinds of conversations we would have at the end of the podcast, but hey, you know, whatever, let's do this backwards.
Let's just do
so,
it.
So because when you were talking, and actually this kind of touches on what Notch was saying, that this episode is so true though. Because the other thing that really is brought out in this is, yes, that so many people treated the doctor this way at the beginning, but we have also see his colleagues change the way they interact with him and start to accept that he has a will of his own and has the ability to grow. And, you know, you could see throughout the the holodeck versions that the different characters were experiencing, you could see, oh yeah, this is from this episode. This is from this episode, you know, because they were like, Doctor, we don't have, like, he started to break down because he added so many different subroutines to his program. And so there's an episode where he started to lose his memory, or I can't remember what it was, but it was because the Matrix couldn't handle all of the all of the additions that he'd made to it. And so they did have to delete his program and reboot it, essentially. And so there was that moment of, oh my gosh, are we really going to be losing the Doctor the way he is? But then you have that hint towards at the end when he starts singing, like, oh no, he's still there. He'll come back, you know. But so you could see where actual experiences informed what he was writing. But as the people who are going through and experiencing the story, they may be like, well, yeah, at first we might have treated you like you were an inanimate object, but we don't treat you like that anymore. Why are you still harping on this? You know, why are you still talking about what happened so many years ago and not recognizing how much we've changed and how much we've advanced as a society, and we've passed the Voting Rights Act. So you all have the same rights and privileges that everyone else, you know. So I think that that was a kind of, in this little microcosm of an episode, it managed to do all of that.
So I think the thing that really shows that very specifically is the scene, the lines about the mobile emitter, where Janeway is like, the mobile emitter liberates you. She uses the word liberation, liberates, which is, you know, and he's like, no, it's a reminder of who I am. And it is, you know, like the second, I mean, we've seen it in Voyager, like someone like whacks it off him and then suddenly he just disappears.
Yeah.
And I think the inclusion of that, and specifically it being in this massive backpack, huge backpack in the holo program, is the, I think that's the sign to me of what the writers were thinking, at least for me. Mm-hmm. And so, and again, the way that it is dealt with is very, I mean, those are conversations I feel like I've had where people, you know, they say like, what do you mean? Like, you know, like you were saying, Emily, with the Voting Rights Act, or like, or we allow you to do all of these wonderful things. Isn't that great? Doesn't that make us wonderful? You know, and
yeah, it's you like, allow wait. Us.
Like, do you hear what you're saying? And so it was one of those moments. And so, but again, I think there are multiple ways that you could perceive this. And I think it is a, in some ways, I like that we're able to have a conversation in this way. And I wonder if we were having this podcast maybe 10 years ago or 15 years ago, if we'd be discussing this episode in the same way. And that makes me feel good that we are, that we're able to.
Yeah.
So now, but before we go to the break here, we got to talk about some of the funny stuff in that holo novel, because it's hilarious. Lieutenant Tulak.
Lieutenant Marseille. Lieutenant Marseille is hilarious.
Well, and also, Lieutenant Marseille is literally just Tom Paris in season one.
Like, yes, absolutely.
He has not changed. That is literally what he was.
Totally.
It is. Yeah, it's ridiculous. He's just a lecherous fool.
Well, and it's so funny when the doctor, like, when later Tom is like, "Is that what you think of me?" And his response isn't, no, I think you're responsible and I think you are hard. His response is, well, you're a married man with a child on the way. And I wanted to say, yeah, that doesn't negate any of the things that you just said about him.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, seriously. I appreciated that Tom Paris got called out in such a big way.
Yeah.
Also, the, like, small visual changes, like Chakotay being Bajoran with a massive...
the turtle. Yeah, I thought it was pretty funny.
And then, you know, it's just... I really appreciated the... And I bet it was fun for the actors to play their characters kind of like that. And they did this in Living Witness, right? Like, another episode of Voyager where the characters play, like, remixed versions of themselves. That was a very serious, poignant episode, or at least the way their recreations were shown. Whereas here, it's kind of shown as this like hilarious slapstick, which I did enjoy that very much.
Was Neelix? I was trying to remember if Neelix was portrayed. He's not really in the. That's why Neelix didn't have a problem with it. Maybe. I'm just because I catch. There was, you know, there was no, he wasn't lampooning Neelix at any point, so
that's interesting. The only other person, well, not the only other, Seven of Nine is Borg, and there aren't any other Borg, and we don't know if there are other species that only have one person, but the only other,
the Delta, the main, only Delta Quadrant alien
member of the cast remaining is the one who doesn't get kind of messed around. And Neelix, I mean, for all of his faults as annoying characteristics for us as the viewers, he's always been somebody who's been very accepting for the most part of difference and change and cultural. Mm-hmm. He's always like, oh, check out this cool food from this other planet. And so that's a really good catch, actually. And that's, I think, I don't know if that was intentional from the writers, but if it was, it was really subtle. And I kind of like it now thinking about it. But what about Barriss's remix of the Doctor's Bro?
That was funny.
Yeah, especially the name was absolutely perfect. The starship Voyeur.
Voyeur. Yes. that was the thing, like, my strange new take. Like, that's what I just found so interesting, that the Doctor just had no clue. And also, there were so many things about that the Doctor said that were very telling about how he feels regarding his position on the ship, because they said, don't you care about what your friends think? And he just kept referring to them as his colleagues and not his friends. Like, so you just get this feeling that he didn't have, like, they kind of saw him as a colleague and friend, but he didn't seem to experience them that same way. Or at least that's not the way his language indicated, or what his language indicated. So I thought that was pretty interesting too, that it took that long and Paris doing something so over the top to finally bring it home. Like, yeah, now can you see why maybe this hurt our feelings, you know? Because we don't like that you see us this way.
I mean, there is also, you touched on something else that, like, I have experienced as a person who is in a minority group here. Sometimes when I meet other people who talk to me about that experience, there are some folks, and this is, you know, it's happened in my life, where someone's been like, these people aren't your friends. They don't care about you. Like, you know, your people care about you. And those feelings come from very complex places for these individuals. So I don't want to be like, they're just idiots or whatever. Like, I don't know. I don't know what created those feelings to the people who mentioned them. But, and this started, like, right when I was, like, first in this country in college, you know, like, talking to some other international students and about the folks who are Americans. And it's very confusing. And there is this question of, like, integration within the culture that you're in versus maintaining your unique identity. Where do the lines between that? How do you participate in your own ethnic group and allow them to feel like you're, you know, like you're not, like, leaving them behind or whatever? And how do you also integrate in the new sculpt? There's, like, really complex stuff there. And so I think, Emily, again, I didn't pick up on this explicitly. I think it was tingling at the back of my mind as I was watching, like, especially that question of the friends thing. But when you pointed it out like that, that's, I don't know how Mike Sussman and the other writer, Phyllis Strong, how they were able to pick up on that stuff, or whether it was explicit or not. But it is something that's come up before, I feel like, in my life at least, explicitly. So that's, wow, that's heavy. That is heavy.
Well, and something else that just jumps out at me as I'm listening to you talk as well. Like, I think about the conversations where a person is confronted with their privilege and their prejudice, right? Mm-hmm. And that's an uncomfortable feeling. People don't like being confronted with that. And so their response is a very defensive response. And that is what his fellow crew members, they did respond defensively. But at the same time, and so if this episode had been made today, perhaps they would have leaned into that a little bit. Where it wouldn't be like, let's get all up in your feelings. Like, no, this is about how I feel and how you all, your behavior has made me feel as a different type of being on this ship. But because the Doctor doesn't, he's trying to absolve himself of making these characters like them. They can't really have that conversation because he tries to, like, oh no, but it's not you. I mean, yes, I used your physical parameters as a starting point, but clearly these are not you. Like, these are different characters, and no one's going to think that these are actually the members of the Voyager crew. Whereas everyone who watches it thinks that these are the members of the Voyager crew, right? Mm-hmm. But so the Doctor's kind of trying to absolve himself of some responsibility here as well. Whereas I kind of feel it would have been interesting if he had leaned into that and said, well, yeah, it comes from some kernel of truth, so maybe let's have a conversation about that.
Absolutely. And I think also the other side of that too is that all of this requires communication in the real world. Navigating people's feelings requires communication. And I feel like sometimes I've been in conversations where the folks who I need to convey my feelings to are told that their feelings cannot be expressed. You just have to listen to that and just like... But the point is, if I don't talk about the defensiveness of the person I'm expressing my feelings to, about their feelings as well, we don't get to an understanding. There's one-way communication just doesn't work, regardless of whether it's like values-based, correct, quote-unquote, or morally right, or whatever. If we don't have some sort of discussion, and there, you can have a discussion without acknowledging the validity in a moral sense of what's being said. You can just say, like, tell me how you feel. I'm not going to tell you that you're right, but I at least can acknowledge that, okay, these emotions exist in you and that we need to work with them. And I think that's a really important thing about the Doctor going into Paris's hologram and getting to see the other side of things, which is, I mean, I don't want to be like that invalidates everything that the Doctor's saying, because it clearly doesn't. But I feel like it is, again, the Doctor getting to acknowledge, okay, your friends' feelings are hurt. And that's something that, you know, if you're talking about your oppression and you're like having this conversation around it, you're gonna have to make that a part of the discussion, because if you don't, you're leaving a critical part of the back and forth communication out of it, and that's gonna be less productive for you. So that's another, I feel like, really interesting thing. So I feel like there's a lot of like cool little angles about those holoprograms going back and forth. Talking again just on the lighter side of it, I just love that the Doctor shows up with a comb over and he's this hilarious golf playing guy who just thinks he's the funniest man on the planet. And that she's like, it hurts when I do this. He's like, don't do it. And then he whacks the part where she's like, there's pain here.
Yeah.
It's just, oh my God. It's just, I mean, again, and he's portrayed as this lecherous loser who's just like fawning all over Seven of Nine and is just incredibly inappropriate, and it's just, I mean, again, it's a mirror, right, for people to see how they're coming across. And I don't know, I found that interplay between those holo novels to be kind of, it was funny, but again, that might be, yeah, go ahead, Adam.
And it actually did make me want to go back and watch some of the what I remember being like sweeter romantic episodes between Seven and the Doctor. Like, maybe it is just creepy, but I haven't seen those episodes in a while. And so let's, maybe Tom has a point here and I need to go review those.
Well, 15-year-old me thought that Someone to Watch Over Me, which is Voyager's, you know, it's kind of a bottle episode where the Seven Doctor thing really starts off. I thought it was really like, you know, I was shipping the Doctor and Seven really hard. Oh, but I remember even at the time, people on the Trek BBS were like, this is Pygmalion. You know, the book from the 1800s, or I think the early 1900s, I can't remember now, that My Fair Lady is based on as well. And the movie starring Julia Roberts and Richard Gere.
Pretty Woman
is also based on the same...
which I haven't seen, actually. But go
ahead. I was going to say Runaway Bride, but...
Different movie. Probably same actors, so. I guess, yeah, huh?
But it's essentially this like powerful man recreating this woman who's coming from a less powerful space into a person that they want to love without really consideration of the woman's feelings. And
yeah.
I remember having like, no, that's not true. It's sweet and it's cute and whatever. And these people being like, oh yeah, it's kind of weird if you really think about it. And I don't know. I mean, I have to rewatch Someone to Watch Over Me in that context. I haven't watched it in many years now, but yeah, Adam, to your point, I think there are definitely episodes that we could go back and revisit.
Isn't that this. Like the saddest when you have an episode that you loved and then you go back and watch it and you're like, oh, this did not hold up the way I imagine. It's so sad.
Can you just imagine someone being like, oh man, I had this great Voyager episode. We got to watch it. Like, I remember Voyager, oh man, and I haven't thought about that in years. It's so good. Threshold. Let's go back. And, like, that was the best. Like, I remember, like,
so cool. And
yeah, like, 12-year-old like, me really liked it. And,
like the movie Zoolander. Oh my gosh.
That is so not one that aged well.
It's so bad. But we all loved it when it came out. Thought it was so funny.
And, I mean, anyway. There's a bunch of that, like, National Lampoon type humor from the early 2000s, late 90s that you go back to now. And it's like, whoa! Oh my god!
Yeah. We recently watched like I don't remember what the movie was, but it was a comedy that was like it was from like 2009 or something. It was like every single joke was about how we were gonna rape somebody, and like, what is this?
I think a lot of people has brought that up watching Friends, which is that there's a lot of casual homophobia in Friends, all over the place, and it's let's just say there's a lot of media. That has kind of it reflects its time in the popular consciousness of social issues at that time, and I think as a corollary though, I have now come to see this episode as one that kind of transcends its time just a little bit in the conversations. I mean, I don't know, maybe these conversations were being had at that time, but just personally that's now where I am with that. But
I'm finding more layers for sure than I did initially.
But hey, why don't we take a break over here, and then we'll come back and discuss the mini measure of a man. All right.
The measure of the mini man. Wait, no. What?
How many times do you want me to say it? My work is not about the Voyager crew.
Come on. Ensign Kimball, Lieutenant Marseille.
The characters look almost exactly like us.
I used your physical parameters as a starting point. But I assure you, any further similarities are purely coincidental.
You set your story on a starship lost in the Delta Quadrant.
What would you have me write about? Palace intrigue on the Klingon homeworld? I do what all good novelists do. I write what I know.
So it is about Voyager.
No! The Vortex characters are larger than life. They're nothing like our crew. As far as I know, Captain, you haven't executed any of my patients.
Doctor, you've written a very imaginative story. But it's conceivable that people will think it's based on fact.
I don't see how.
How many holograms carry mobile emitters?
The emitter in my story is nothing like the real one.
Yeah, what was the point of that? It was like carrying around a small shuttlecraft.
It's a metaphor, a symbol of the burdens that I live with every day. Imagine having to take this everywhere you go. It would be a constant reminder that you're different from everyone else. I wanted the player to feel the weight of it, literally.
Your emitter isn't a ball and chain. It liberates you.
It doesn't always feel that way.
I didn't know better. I'd think the story was written by someone who feels oppressed. Is that how you see yourself, Doctor?
Of course not. The real victims are my brothers in the Alpha Quadrant.
Brothers?
Hundreds of EMH Mark I's. Identical to me in every respect, except they've been condemned to a menial existence. Scrubbing conduits, mining dilithium. There's a long history of writers drawing attention to the plight of the oppressed. The Vedic song, for example, tells the story of the occupation of Bajor.
I understand you have your reasons for writing this, but you should consider how it's going to make your friends feel.
I'm sorry my work offends you. But if the price of expressing myself is having to suffer the scorn of a few colleagues, so be it.
Welcome back to Strange New Takes. This is the part where Mariner throws down her mic and says, "Drumhead!" Because essentially we have a courtroom scene at the end of this end of this thing. And I mean, a lot happens between the Hollow novels. We have the Neelix conversation. We have the Doctor and Paris argument. We've touched on those a little bit, so I don't think we need to beat the a dead horse there quite a lot. But essentially, this becomes Measure of a Man at the end of the episode. It is literally like they're sitting around the table and deciding whether Data is a human being.
Yeah, but it just like they compressed all of a Measure in the of a Man into is it even 11 minutes? I don't
it's pretty short.
Like it is the very last part of the episode, I don't know. I mean, I definitely get that, like, yeah, okay, we need to, like, compress the arguments because it's only 11 minutes each day that we can talk. But it's also, I don't know. We bring up, like, interesting ethical quandaries and, like, legal discussions that we can have. And then but since we only have a couple minutes left, we just can't, we gloss over all of them. And I don't know. I would have been really interested in a separate episode that was just this, because I think that they have interesting ideas, but then we rush through the entire thing and the judge's conclusion is basically like, no, you're not a person, but you're like kind of an artist maybe, and it's such a contrast to a Measure of a Man where the judge is like taking a stand to like, okay, well, I need to actually argue something that is going to be used like throughout history. And this judge is not at all interested in making any amount of history, which I know is also a valid way of doing it, but ugh.
It also seems that it just seems like Measure of a Man is the precedent for why the Doctor should absolutely have these rights. Like, I don't see that there is much difference between the Doctor and Data. They're both programmed. They're both, you know, they both have done things to expand the original parameters of their programming. They've both like it just so it's just kind of astounding to me that they don't end up ruling. They don't end up just saying, well, yeah, we already settled this in season two of the Next Generation. Of course.
Yeah, they could have said, I have this VHS that I'm going to submit as evidence. You're going to have to watch it over the course of 4 days, which is a little awkward. But yeah, it's.
Can you imagine if they had like this 11 minutes? Someone was like, wait, can we pause? I need to use the restroom. Like, please.
We'll adjourn for a day so you can pee.
I mean, I'm just imagining now Riker going up to the Doctor, pulling off the mobile emitter, being like, Pinocchio is broken. Its strings have been cut.
remove his hollow emitter.
Yeah. Right, but that's, I mean, that's a tonal shift, right? And that is a little bit stark. This episode goes from being like, ha ha, hilarious, to like, oh, really serious by the end, and like heartwarming, and it tries to balance like the heartwarming stuff and like the really serious stuff, right. And then it tries to do a lot.
Yeah.
When everyone tried to share their opinion, like their experiences of the Doctor and why he should be seen as a person, and yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and it's just... I mean, I guess I get maybe it's more realistic that the result of the trial is like kind of unsatisfying of just like, okay, you're allowed to like enter or break this specific agreement because you're an artist. But because like in reality, law does not like just do these sweeping changes that like reverse everything from the past 200 years or whatever. But I don't know. It's just such an unsatisfying ending to this.
It is such a cop out to be like, yeah, okay, we're gonna give this episode a bow, and we're gonna make and let everybody feel happy about what happened here, instead of like making it a very complicated kind of ending where the Doctor doesn't get what he wants.
And yeah,
it's weird because there's also that weird coda at the end tacked on of like the dilithium mining colony or whatever it was, where then we see all these holograms being oppressed. At the end, and get them like being kind of inspired by the Doctor.
Yeah,
I also love like. Oh, go ahead, Adam.
I mean, part of it's like I feel like even that scene is a little bit ridiculous because it like they're like using this little tiny pick. Like, I don't understand what they're mining that it makes it more efficient to like just give these holograms like hand tools. I mean, I guess exocomps are people, and so There are no robots that can be used by the Federation anymore, so they have to enslave all of the Mark I doctors.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those... I guess, I mean, the Federation wasn't there, though, right? Like, the Federation was treating these holograms as, like, single use, like, they show up and go away. And, I mean, that's how holodeck characters are treated, right? Like, mm-hmm. And so I don't find it that hard to believe that someone would be like, yeah, we could just turn them on, leave them to do that stuff. But it is kind of extra. Let's put it that way.
Oh, I was going to say, now you just have me thinking about how gross it is the way holograms are probably used in holodeck programs. And, you know, I mean, like, and then what's the line between when one is sentient and one is not? And I mean, I started thinking of, it Vic Fontaine, right?
Let's do that episode next. How about that?
We should. Because he's totally sentient. And recognizes that he's a hologram, and anyway, and it's very interesting, but yeah, you just start wondering what. We shouldn't have holodecks anymore.
Well, have you all watched Altered Carbon on Netflix?
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't.
I mean, it's not quite a one-to-one like dealing with that, but it is a very like, it is gruesome. It is very troubling. I'm not going to spoil what it's about, because you find out the stuff at the very end of the first season. But it kind of deals with some of what we're talking about here, mm-hmm. which I hadn't thought about until this. I thought about like the Doctor's mm-hmm. like holodeck personality, but I hadn't thought about like, okay, all those Robin Hood characters were just getting murdered by Robin Hood every week. And, you know, there's more troubling things that we can talk, graphic things that we can talk about here. Like, do they remember that that's happened? And, you know, I think it does bring up some really troubling questions, Emily, that you just broached the subject on. I think Altered Carbon does deal with some of them in a very different way, but it asks some of the very same questions. And like, it, I think it's like, it comes in at a point that's like three steps ahead of these questions. So the mm-hmm. the humans in Altered Carbon deal with some of those questions, and then we see the repercussions of what they've done because of the choices that they've made in response. So but it is that show, I mean, Adam, I don't know, it's not for everybody.
Yeah, it's definitely one that I would totally understand if someone turned on that show and then just watched an episode and was like, nope, and turned it back off. But
I wonder if that would be me. I feel like this must be my job in life, is to like go and bring out the dark side of something, and I don't even mean to. It's like at church, people are like, Emily, can't you just enjoy something? Like, well, you know,
we just call our podcast Emily Ruins Star Trek.
Exactly. It's like last week I preached on the 4th of July and how that can be troubling as people of faith, and I'm like, and I'm sure all of you are sitting there going, Emily, can't you just celebrate something for once? Instead of pointing out all the potential problems.
Well, but I mean, I think that there's a point in discussing some. I mean, look, my appreciation of Author has honestly increased quite significantly since we started talking about this episode. So I think that there is something good about that. However, I also think that there's a point to some people who are... I mean, there's a difference also between talking about some of these questions of like how Star Trek relates to troubling things in real life versus just being like, I hate Trek because it's not TOS, or like Kirk shouldn't be doing that, or in episode 43 of season 2 of TNG, Picard does something that clearly contradicts the way he wears his wristwatch in this movie. You know, like, there's like differences there, I feel like. And so I appreciate these conversations. I really do. Personally, I immensely. I say that at the end of every episode. I really do mean it. But getting just to another plot point. Well, do we have anything more to say about Mini Measure of Man at the end of this episode, or should we move on to talking about the family stuff?
I just want to give a shout out. That's an excellent set title of this little section of the podcast. So good job to you for writing Mini Measure of a Man. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. I have stuff to say about. I think the family stuff is interesting too. So that would be. I'm game for us moving to that point.
Go ahead.
Oh well, I mean, one of the things you also see. So it takes the Doctor the entire episode to start to understand why his friends and colleagues might be somewhat troubled by what happens in his Holland novel. Just like it takes Seven of Nine the whole episode to start to understand the impact of these conversations that people are having with their family members or their friends. You know, so I think that's why they end up capping the episode with the conversation between Seven and her aunt. But really, I can't remember who mentioned it. I think it was you, Notch. The most poignant one is Torres with her father. And this was something that I was thinking as I was watching the episode. You know, we were talking last week with Discovery. Because of the format that Discovery is, you really do see huge character arcs and character growth that's happening in that show. Because, I mean, that's just the way the show is constructed. You don't see that hardly at all in TOS or in The Next Generation. There really are not character arcs. I mean, maybe slight, but there's really not a huge difference. It's more a feeling of the actors kind of coming into their own and really owning the characters, and that's more why you see changes in the characters over the series. Deep Space Nine has more character development, part of it because of the way it was created and the way they told stories. But Voyager went back to telling stories the way they did in TNG, except they do have character development and character arcs that happen in Voyager. As I was watching this now, I can't remember if this episode happens before or after, but there's that episode with Torres where she is trying to genetically alter her child because she finds out her baby's going to have the forehead ridges like she has. And it takes her on this whole thing with her father. And she like is reliving all of these memories and the trauma that she experienced because she believed her father left she and her mother because they were Klingon. And so having her daughter look part Klingon, Torres is just, she's really reliving that trauma, thinking Paris is going to do the same thing, that he's going to end up leaving she and her daughter because of them being Klingon. And I'm trying to remember if that episode, episode is after, isn't it?
Before. It was is the 12th episode of the seventh season. It's called Lineage.
Yeah. And so that makes, well, okay. So this is an example though. It doesn't actually matter which order it comes in because so seeing this conversation that she has with her father while knowing that happened, you know, earlier on in her pregnancy, just gives that scene so much more emotion. And it's a huge thing for B'Elanna to have been able to have that conversation with her father. And even if it came after, it's kind of like maybe that conversation spurned some of these things and brought up some of that stuff. That's what I couldn't remember. But anyway, I thought that was just really a powerful scene because of knowing the other things that happened with B'Elanna because of her pregnancy and her concerns and her worries and stuff.
Yeah, and I also appreciate how that scene doesn't resolve it. Like it's like they're pretty much cut off and are able to like they're able to finish a sentence, but it's more of a like, okay, I'll write you. And I don't know, especially in like an episodic Trek, I think that there's usually the desire to just like wrap things up nicely and neatly. And it's, it felt like that, like the writers got something correct there where we're just like, no, relationships take way more investment, way more time to actually change. So I did like that about it.
Yeah, and I think I appreciated also the Kim and his parents conversation in a smaller way, because it's, you know, we hear about his mom in the first season in Caretaker, and just actually have these two loving parents talking about their son, and they're like, I'll write to the captain! It's adorable. I really... Also, by the way, Kimball's someone joking. Was it like Kimball joking, like, have you been promoted or something? Like, there was a promotion joke there. That's right. Tulak was questioning Kim's, like, authority to, like, question what's going to happen to the Doctor in the Holonaut. Anyway. but I appreciated that. One quick point there. This episode is filled with some really prolific guest actors who I want to just shout out. Richard Hurd, clearly he passed away last year, is a major television actor. He played Owen Paris, the Admiral. Barry Gordon, who plays the bully and has done a lot of work. Joseph Campanella has been in a lot of movies. He's the guy who plays the arbiter at the trial. You have the Robert Ito and Irene Sue, who are the two parents of Harry Kim. They've done a lot of work. Robert Ito, for example, was in the movie Midway, about the World War II Battle of the Midway, a pivotal World War II film. I mean, Irene Sue has also done a lot of TV work, continues to. And then the two lesser-known guest actors, Lorraine Wozoff, who played Seven's aunt, and then Juan Garcia, who plays John Torres. But they've also done a bunch of work. They're not inexperienced actors, let's put it this way. So this, acting-wise, this episode is like a heavyweight episode when you look at the guest cast. I thought the scene with Seven and her aunt was also surprisingly touching for me. To see her finding out, like, oh yeah, some of these things that I do are because that's how I was as a child. There's more to me than the Borg.
Like the strawberries.
Yeah, and it's also interesting that, because she was, at least for like a normal kid, you should have some memories of when you were six or whatnot. But like getting assimilated was such a traumatic experience that she doesn't have access to like what she was before she was Borg. And it's it was kind of touching how we're you see some of the trauma that she's been through, and even to the level of like she's like, that must have been inconvenient for you, maybe I shouldn't have called,
right?
And I just that was a really nice character moment for Seven.
When I was thinking how it was kind of sad because she was approaching it from a, I think she was expecting rejection. And so that's how she was interpreting every single thing her aunt said. Yeah. And her aunt didn't mean it that way at all. And her aunt did a good job, I think, of kind of like assuaging that, like, oh no, you know, like, anyway, but it was just, so that was just sad. Like that she interpreted everything as being, oh, I must've been a trouble or a burden or, oh no, no, no. That's I was telling you that as a fun memory. Like I was fond of that.
It was weird that Seven was also just listening into all the conversations.
The Starship Voyeur.
That's hilarious. Well, any other final items that we want to discuss about this episode before we move on to our ratings? One just quick thing. I like how golf clubs now have ridges on them. It's just really weird. He like pulls up this weird futuristic golf club. I don't think
it's like future silverware.
Yeah, exactly.
Space fork.
Pretty much. Well, let's take our necks out and give this episode a rating. So, which of you has a strange new rating for Author? Go ahead, Adam. Just do it. It's okay.
Do it.
It's okay. You have a task here.
It's bizarre because this episode, like as you've been hearing from me this whole time, there are a lot of things that I really like about this episode and that I think are hilarious and are great. But it just for me, it didn't feel like it aged well in a way which is funny because it's like almost the same reason that Notch thinks it did age well. this has been a great conversation, but I think I'm going to put this one as a 6. That's just where we're going to go. I like it less with each rewatching. I watched it a couple months ago, right after we watched Measure of a Man. I was like, oh, I'm going to watch that other one. That's just as great of an episode. And it's also got some really interesting legal stuff. No, it doesn't.
This is just revenge for me giving last week's episode, Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad, a 6. And
I
you
think
gave
it
a 10. And I'm going to give this one a 10, actually, because that's how I felt about it. Because, all the reasons, I think this touches some nerves for me. I think it's enjoyable. I'm a huge Doctor fan. And I just enjoy how the funny parts. I think that there are some issues I could probably find with the pacing and how deep some of the conversations. So I'm sympathetic to that,
But I think because of the issues that it handles and how rarely I see them handled like this, I think it's a 10 for me.
I'm going to split the difference and I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5, which would be an 8. But I just had a good time watching this episode, and this conversation has been great. I've really enjoyed the conversation and the things we've been able to kind of suss out of the episode as we've gone on with this podcast. So, yeah.
Well, dear listener, next week we're going to talk about, is it called It's a Paper Moon? What's that episode of Deep Space Nine called here? I'm going to look this up real quick.
It's not a paper moon.
It's only a paper
moon. It's only just a paper moon. We're so close.
All the combinations. It's only a paper moon, which is also from the 7th season of DS9. It's the 10th episode. Watch that before next week's podcast. I watched this just about two or three months ago, and I am extraordinarily looking forward to our conversation about this. It is, I feel like Tonally is a huge shift from what we did this week, so I'm really looking forward to it. With that, also, by the way, we haven't forgotten that we promised to review Wonderlands. We will do that at another time, because this week a few of the people who've read the book couldn't make it, so obviously we can't do that right this second. But stay tuned for our review of that. So if you're reading that book, you can read a little bit more slow. anyway, as always, thank you, Emily, and thank you, Adam. I truly love talking Star Trek with each of you for an hour every week. It's one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah, yes, thanks for making this a place for us to join.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. Thank you, Rudy, Dinah, and Max, wherever y'all are, whatever y'all are doing. I hope it's going well. Thank you, dear listener, also, for joining us. Do appreciate you making time for us each week. Thank you, Jishnu Guha, for recording our theme music. We appreciate the fact that you put in some time to strum away the Klingon theme for us. And finally, special thanks to the Pathfinder Project. You know, without Pathfinder, we would not have any of this stuff. I guess I should be thanking Barkley, but who thinks about Barkley? Everybody ignores Barkley, so I will too. Special thanks to the Pathfinder Project for connecting Voyager to Earth. All right, everybody, have a great rest of your week. Goodbye.
Bye.